Now, President Biden has a variety of foreign policy challenges waiting for him as he takes office, working on economic issues with China, building up strained NATO alliances, and dealing with Russia. It's one of the United States' most complicated relationships. Russia's invasion of Crimea tested the Obama administration. Its campaign hacking and disinformation efforts on social media were investigated throughout President Trump's time in office. And now a large-scale cyber attack has infiltrated U.S. government agencies and businesses. Most experts and officials point the finger at Russia on that one, too. We're checking in now with an expert on U.S.-Russia relations about where things stand now and what we might expect from a Biden administration. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of tone do you want to see President Biden strike toward Vladimir Putin and Russia? Should the U.S. move to hold Russia accountable for the big cyber attack? What issues are you worried about when it comes to U.S.-Russian relationships? Call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your questions. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lowell Barrington is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University and an expert on post-communist politics. Lowell, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rob. It's great to be back.
Well, what would you characterize our current relationship, the U.S.-Russia relationship, as right now as we switch from one White House to another?
Well, it's interesting because if we think about the last 4 years, that question would have really depended on what side you're asking the question from. From Russia's side, it had been a very good 4 years, with the exception of some of the sanctions that had either been in place previously or been kind of forced on the Trump administration by Congress. But other than that, Russia really did get most of what it wanted from U.S. foreign policy on a number of fronts. So I think the Biden administration inherits this situation where Russia has really benefited significantly from a lot of our decisions at the expense of, they would argue, and I would too, our own national security interests. So we inherit a situation where there are a lot of immediate challenges, which would include the cyber attack you mentioned, Alexei Navalny's fate, who's returned back to Russia and was promptly arrested at the airport. There's sort of some immediate things. There's relatively pressing things, and then there's also longer-term things for us to worry about.
What are some of the things you saw in the last 4 years under the Trump administration that might have helped Russia more than they helped the United States?
Well, I think just the tone in a lot of ways. President Trump treated Putin as a partner who could be believed over our own intelligence community in a lot of ways, and certainly over our longtime allies. I was thinking today about the press conference between Trump and Putin in Helsinki. Seems like decades ago now, but it was actually in July of 2018. And one of the lessons from that seemed to be that just the president's words really matter. And he continued to praise Putin throughout his presidency. And so there's kind of this tone, this rhetorical tone about how Russia could be trusted and Russia should not be a suspect when people think it's done bad things. And, that occurred even when there was really clear evidence about what Russia had been doing. You mentioned all the way back to the, election interference in 2016 to the recent cyber attacks. Throughout that whole period, Russia has been taking steps to kind of undermine our country's stability and security. And then I think there were some specific things. I mean, the sharing of classified information, the Oval Office, with the Russian foreign minister and ambassador to the U.S., the undermining of NATO repeatedly in calls for NATO to be, reformed and funded differently and things from President Trump, the calling for Russia to get back into the G7 when they were kicked out, withdrawing from Syria. I mean, there's sort of a number of things along the last few years that really, in President Trump's mind, may have benefited the United States, but in Putin's mind, clearly were big wins for Russia.
We are talking about U.S.-Russian relations right now with Lowell Barrington from Marquette University as we transition from the Trump presidency to now the Biden presidency. What do you want to see from the Biden administration when it comes to working with or against Russia and Vladimir Putin? How about the NATO alliance and our allies, longtime allies in Western Europe? What questions do you have about the last 4 years or the next 4 years? 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. A lot of President Biden's inaugural speech focused on domestic issues, but he did mention the need to rebuild alliances. What would it take to do that, especially when it comes to NATO?
Well, I think it's both a quick process in that there was a sigh of relief, I think, across lots of Western Europe today. But it will also take time. I mean, the damage and sort of lack of trust is not something that you just snap your fingers and fix right away. But I think it will get repaired. I think there's common interests in Western Europe and the U.S. to repair that relationship. The other thing I think I would say is that one of the things about the focus on domestic issues today in the speech and things like unity is that President Biden understands that foreign policy and domestic political events and things are really tied together. So one of the other things about Putin was he had really hoped to kind of undermine Western-style democracy, discredit and divide especially the United States. And by the way, I'll tell you, when the U.S. has been talked about in recent years on Russian news, you know, in Russia itself, for example, I mean, there's just a drumbeat about what a mess the United States is, right? So one of the things about healing and creating unity, it's not just rhetoric, it's also about our position in the world and how other countries see us or maybe could again see us as a model rather than as something that Putin has tried to point to us as, which is just, again, a kind of mess and an example of why democracy doesn't work.
Yeah, what's through Russian eyes and maybe elsewhere, the events of January 6th and the storming of the U.S. Capitol, what did you see Russians and others seeing in the United States in that moment?
I mean, I think they saw what we saw, and that is not a good thing. I mean, they clearly saw how fragile the democracy appeared to be. They saw really a complete lack of preparation for some sort of conflict, which, again, I think is not something we want to portray abroad, that are relatively disorganized. I don't want to say they were unorganized entirely, but a relatively disorganized group of people could essentially take over one of the, major buildings in our government in a kind of, temple to democracy in all sorts of ways and things, right? So I think that's one of the visual was such a powerful message. But also, I would say one of the really important things that Congress did was kind of get back up and finish its business that night. I think that was also, we focus on the negatives, and we should, of that event. But it was a really important moment, and I will give some of the Republicans a lot of credit here, too, of getting ourselves back together and showing the world in that same building that we could sort of finish the day's business. And I think that was an important message as well.
You mentioned that part of Putin's strategy is to disrupt Western democracy. That's not just the United States. Where else do we see these kind of activities, the cyber influence, the supporting of, I guess, far-right populist movements in other countries?
Right. They've certainly worked on that in Western Europe. They've been, really aggressive, including even things like the Brexit vote in the UK. Russia had a lot of cyber influence on trying to whip up people to support the Brexit vote. I think there are a lot of things that they've been doing in that way. It's also been something in Eastern Europe we've seen a lot. There's been a targeting of some of the NATO members in Eastern Europe to try to weaken their governments a bit, even some of their neighboring states like Estonia and Latvia, but also trying to get more support for some of the more nationalist leaders in Poland and Hungary and places like that as well. So they've really been mostly targeting Europe more than other parts of the world. But, certainly, again, they see this as a multi-front war, both a literal cyber war, but also a kind of public relations war.
We're talking to Lowell Barrington, associate professor of political science at Marquette University, looking at the U.S.-Russia relationship and where it may go with the presidential transition. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to see from President Biden when it comes to Russia and dealing with Vladimir Putin? What do you think the U.S. should do in response to the recent massive cyber attack targeting government agencies and a number of businesses as well? Are there other areas of concern for you when it comes to Russia? A lot of domestic items on the table. Do you think that there should be a focus on foreign policy issues, including Russia and elsewhere? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Lowell Barrington, professor of political science at Marquette University, looking at where America's relationship with Russia stands, what lies ahead as President Biden takes office. You can join in if you'd like with your thoughts and your questions and what you think of how the Trump administration dealt with Russia, what you're hoping for from the Biden administration. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Well, I wanted to talk to you about personnel from the Secretary of State. When we have one, we have an interim one on down. We saw a lot of people, Russia hands, leave the administration or be reshuffled after the impeachment and things like that. Where do we stand with the people, the knowledge, the institutional knowledge to deal with issues like this?
Well, that's a great question, because the sort of middle and upper middle levels of the bureaucracy in a lot of ways have really been gutted of a lot of the people that had a lot of experience and expertise in these areas. But I think President Biden will work pretty effectively to bring a lot of new people into those positions, hopefully fairly quickly. And I think that starts with the people that he's nominated at the top. I mean, this is a, with the exception of Jake Sullivan, who's his national security advisor, who's quite young. I think he's in his 40s, although does have some experience as deputy chief of staff, I think, at State Department. Other than that, I mean, these are senior people with a lot of experience, and that starts with Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State nominee, who, again, is somebody who brings a lot of expertise and competence. I think the interesting one, the defense secretary pick, which, as you know, was a bit controversial because it's a retired four-star general who had to get the special waiver because of how recently he had been active in the military to be defense secretary, Lloyd Austin. But he's, again, someone who is really well-respected in the military and more broadly in the security community as well. And I think that's an important sign, again, of the effort to kind of rebuild these institutions with people that the people below them will trust and respect. And I think that's an important step. And even people like Merrick Garland, again, as Attorney General, who I think will do a great job of getting the Justice Department back to being, what it should be, instead of at times being a bit of a particular kind of political tool for the administration. I think that's going to be a really important step and, a signal to the world as well as domestically.
Now, going back before the Trump administration, we had then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with her reset button idea that didn't pan out so well. Before that, President George W. Bush saying he'd looked into Putin's soul and found a guy he could work with. Nobody's really figured this out, right? There are no easy answers when it comes to dealing with Russia.
No, that's a fair point. And I think, again, the reset worked actually for the first Obama term pretty well. It just went really south after that. I think we know more than we did. And I think once we can move beyond the sort of strange relationship that we had between a president and President Putin to get to a point, again, where we bring in the experts who study this, I think we have a better sense that you need both. You need to be able to negotiate with Russia. We have I mentioned the cyber attack and Alexei Navalny and things like that as kind of pressing needs. There's another really pressing topic, which is the New START treaty, which is set to expire in just a couple of weeks at this point in February. And, that's a really important treaty between Russia and the U.S., in part because both Russia and the U.S. have pulled out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. So this New START treaty is essentially the only remaining nuclear weapons treaty we have with Russia. And there's a way to do a five-year extension. I know they're going to work on that real hard from the start of the Biden administration. So there's kind of this, on the one hand, we need to do that. We need to negotiate. But the other side of it is you have to respond and you have to punish Russia more forcefully, both in our words but also the actions. And Russia is fairly vulnerable still economically, and I think they've but the combination of the effects of COVID and the economic instability in Russia, which is partly still due to some of the sanctions we've had hanging on, but also the lower price of oil and things like that, have made them vulnerable to pressure if we were willing to do that. So I think that's going to be the goal in a lot of ways for the Biden administration, is to figure out this carrot and stick approach, where we need to work with them on things, but we also just can't let them do what they want without consequences.
Yeah, let's talk more about the nuclear weapons issue. I mean, I was of the generation that grew up with the day after and kind of the threat of nuclear war. We still have two well nuclear armed superpowers, the United States and Russia, out there. And, it's not front and center all the time. Should we be watching that more closely?
I'm pretty confident they'll get something worked out. I think it's in Russia's interest not to have another arms race. You know, they can't afford that financially in the same way to have massive increases in expenditures for nuclear weapons either. I think there's some sense that it's in both countries' interest to get that worked out. Hopefully, again, that can happen by the deadline of the expiration of the New START treaty. But I think things will get worked out there. Your point's an interesting one, though, because there are a lot of things we don't pay attention to that I think could be kind of flashpoints. I mean, Ukraine's gotten a lot of attention, but, you know, we were really not part of the negotiations over Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine were really working with Germany and France on that. I would expect that the Biden administration would like to get involved in that a little more. And the other one's really interesting, and we thought about a little bit, I guess, in the context of Syria, but it's the Eastern Mediterranean region is one that both NATO, including the U.S., and Russia have a kind of contest over, in the sense that it's our southern flank in a way in terms of NATO, but it's also the link in the Russian case from the Black Sea to the Indian Ocean, and they see it as a crucial part of their both economic and security interests. And it's one of the big reasons that they were so focused on Syria was to maintain good relations over ports, for example, in Syria and the Eastern Mediterranean. So, I mean, that's one, if you're thinking about what do we not talk enough about, that's a kind of sneaky one, I think, that we need to keep our eyes on a little bit, that there could be some actual, you know, potential confrontations in the Mediterranean there.
Talking to Lowell Barrington from Marquette University, looking at U.S.-Russian relations as we have a change of administrations in the White House. Lowell, you mentioned earlier the idea of consequences for bad behavior by the Russians, whether it's interference in other countries' elections or massive cyber attacks on the United States. But what kind of tools do we have to respond to those kind of things in a meaningful way?
I think the sanctions one is still really underutilized. I mean, we put sanctions on Russia a couple times during the Trump administration, that he was, again, President Trump at that point was dragged a bit into those or forced at one point actually by Congress with veto-proof majorities in both houses to basically force some new sanctions on Russia. But again, Russia is vulnerable economically. I think sanctions can work. The other thing that we can do is, again, call out Russia more forcefully. I mean, it really matters to Putin how he's viewed in the world. And it was very helpful when they would do something if the president were to say, well, it might be them, but it might be other people. We don't really know. But the intelligence community did know, right? So I think changing the rhetoric is going to help. And then the third thing, again, is just, you know, when you display competence and fact-based approaches to policymaking and a commitment to democracy and a commitment to unity. And again, I'll go back to that. You know, we heard the word unity and united and things in the address today by President Biden, you know, repeatedly. But when you do those things, you take away a lot of the ammunition for people like Putin. It weakens his claim to have a kind of model that's better than the American model around the world. And I think one of the things, again, we need to do is just get our domestic house in order, and that will go at least part of the way to helping us push back against Russia.
One changing factor, you know, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, you had basically one superpower in the world, the United States. Now we've got the rise of China, definitely as an economic power, rising military power. Does that change how we think about Russia?
Yeah, in a couple of ways. One of them, the New START Treaty I mentioned, one of the delays in getting that renegotiated was that we wanted China as part of it because we are concerned about the development of the nuclear weapons in China as well. So even the issue of something just like nuclear security, the China question is a big one in U.S.-Russian relations. We also are very concerned, though, about some of the connections developing and strengthening between Russia and China, that one of the things that's happened is that we have, and the argument might be, we've kind of driven China toward Russia a bit in the last few years. And so I think that that's one, again, just thinking about Russia is an important regional power, but a united Russia and China working together on security issues is a much bigger threat.
Let's bring on a caller. Harry is with us in Delavan. Harry, hello.
Hi. Yeah, the one thing I wanted to say is that once Biden was in there and he was sworn in, I had a huge feeling of relief. You know, it just took a huge burden off my heart. So, thank you.
Harry, why is that?
Because now the Russians ain't going to take us over. and we're not going to get bombed by the Russians, and we're not going to get into any stupid wars.
Harry, thanks for the call. I don't know that there was a major risk of being bombed by the Russians, but Harry feeling relieved and thinking that Biden will be a more reliable hand, I guess, in dealing with Russia, Lowell.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I think that's happening in the U.S. I talked to a friend today who actually said, is it strange that I feel so relieved today? And I said, no, that's a feeling a lot of people are having. And I think, it's also a feeling outside the United States. I think that it's as important to Western Europe and a lot of other parts of the world that we have kind of turned the page here, moving forward in, a focus on experience and competence and facts and things that, again, just makes generally for a much more stable government and stable foreign relations with the U.S. and other countries around the world.
Briefly, Lowell, over the last 4 years, we've seen in some cases Republicans in Congress take the lead on pushing for consequences for Russia. Do you see that as a place where a Democratic president and Republicans in Congress might find common ground?
That's a great question, because, yes, I think that is one where I think a lot of the Republicans in Congress felt sort of awkward and uneasy at times with the lack of verbal and actual sanction-like pushback from the Trump administration. So I think that's definitely, as President Biden does look for places where we can bring Republicans and Democrats together, I think being stronger against countries around the world that are pushing an anti-democratic model and trying to undermine our system, I think that would be a great place to start.
We'll leave it there, Lowell. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Rob.
Lowell Barrington is an associate professor of political science at Marquette University. He talked to us about what the presidential transition could mean for relations between the U.S. and Russia.